Welcome to today's study. It's April 28th, 2024 of the Common Era. Ward Green with you again. For today's study, it's 21:11 hours Eastern Daylight Time. And I'm glad to be with you. I had a busy day. I had 11 hours sleep last night. Woke up very late in the day. And I did a laundry. I needed to do laundry, I thought, rather than postponing it. I did it and tried out the new washer for the first time. It actually works, and it's very quiet when it does the washing part. It doesn't move as violently or as noisily as my previous washer did, or our previous washer, as the case really is. Today's proverb is from chapter 16 of Proverbs. Verses 7 and 8. Little children, here's the daily proverb. When any man's ways give Jehovah delight, then even his enemies see him as right. A little with righteousness wins, not greater abundance with sins. Wise words are those. More is not always better, from which comes the expression, less is more. Today's reading in the Crucible article, part 2, chapter 11, paragraph 3, is a short study today. Our chronology cannot be considered as the true or only true chronology, as our understanding may yet change. That's just sort of the disclaimer. That doesn't mean we don't believe it, or that we don't actually think it is the true chronology, because there's no better chronology that we can find up till now. Trying to fit the facts into our given chronology, we have found out very quickly how good it is. And so we continued to test more and more facts, allowing our chronology to be the guide, or crucible, within which facts are determined. The continued success of our Grail is unbelievable. The illustration of the Holy Grail for the chronology comes about because it was said for many years that the biblical chronology, it was called the Holy Grail of biblical archaeology. The continued success of our Grail is unbelievable. Not to mean only that it's hard to believe, but also that it is stunningly amazing, accurate, near perfection, and exciting. You know, it's true. That's the only word. As the dating of the Mycenaean 3A1 pottery at Hazor, dated as 1425 to 1400 BCE, confirms our dating for Pharaoh Thutmose IV, who reigned 1414 to 1407 BCE, whose scarab was found at Hazor, so do we see also that Hazor's destruction in the reign of Thutmose III, 1490 to 1440, is that right? Let me think. Right. And the gap in the city's layers at about 1450, both agree with Joshua as destroying Hazor in 1452 BCE. So obviously it became re-inhabited after the destruction in 1450, but this existence of the scarab right at the right time, these scarabs that were manufactured for the pharaohs, they probably were contemporary with the pharaoh, and people thought of them normally at the time that the pharaoh was reigning, that the popularity of these scarabs, the first idea, the most logical idea or the most obvious idea is that these scarabs were popular during the time when the pharaoh was reigning, but of course they also could have been after the pharaoh with a smaller probability. It could have been collectibles or things that hung around after the pharaoh had passed away or ceased reigning. But these scarabs could not have existed prior to the pharaoh's reign. That's the difference there. But the fact that these things were contemporary, the pottery is completely consistent with the dating of the pharaoh. Is remarkable because we found his scarab at Hazor, right? And then the pottery was dated at the same time as the pharaoh also. The dating of the pottery is done completely independently from the dating of the pharaoh. So the fact that they coincided, the dates of the pottery and the date of the pharaoh plus the scarab was found there, it's pretty good confirmation of the date of the pharaoh Thutmose IV. And then the fact there was a gap in the layers of the city when they were doing the archaeological digs on the city of Hazor, and the gap was about 1450. That was fantastic and wonderful agreement with the destruction of Hazor by Joshua in 1452 BCE. Despite this agreement, this is incredibly good agreement with our chronology. It's great, magnificent agreement with our chronology. Despite that, there's still debate going on concerning Jericho. Just like in the world, there's debate about lots of things, and that's no exception. They're still debating whether the Israelites were even at Jericho and things like that. There are many different debates in the world, so just to be aware, and that's all for today's study of the Crucible article. Now we've done our proverb also, haven't we? So Nehemiah chapter 4. Now it came about as soon as Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and highly offended, and he kept deriding the Jews. And he began to say before his brothers and the military force of Samaria, yes, he began to say, what are the feeble Jews doing? Will they depend upon themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish up in a day? Will they bring the stones to life out of the heaps of dusty rubbish when they are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was alongside him. That was Sanballat. And he went on to say, even what they are building, if a fox went up against it, he would certainly break down their wall of stones. Hear, O God, for we have become an object of contempt, Nehemiah continues, and make their reproach return upon their own head, and give them to the plunder in the land of captivity. And do not cover over their error and their sin from before you. Let it not be wiped out, for they have committed offense against the builders. So, Nehemiah writes, we kept building the wall, and the entire wall came to be joined together, clear to half its height. And the people continued to have a heart for working. Half the wall in height, all the way around the city, they had a wall that was half the height at the lowest point. Now it came about that as soon as Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem had gone forward, for the gaps had started to be stopped up, they became very angry, and all of them began to conspire together to come and fight against Jerusalem and cause me disturbance. But we prayed to our God and kept a guard posted against them day and night on account of them. And Judah began to say, the general inhabitants of Judah began to say, the power of the burden bearer has stumbled, and there is a great deal of rubbish, and we ourselves are not able to build on the wall. Moreover, our adversaries kept saying, they will not know and they will not see until we come right in among them, and we shall certainly kill them and put a stop to the work. And it came about that whenever the Jews were dwelling close by them, whenever the Jews dwelling close by them came in, close by the city. And it came about, whenever the Jews dwelling close by them came in, they proceeded to say to us 10 times, they will come up from all the places where you people will return to us. Or the study version says, they will come at you from all directions. They will come at us from all directions. The study Bible. So I kept men posted at the lowest parts of the place behind the wall at the open places. And I kept the people posted by families with their swords, their lances, and their bows. When I saw their fear immediately arose, I immediately arose. When I saw their fear, I immediately arose and said to the nobles and the deputy rulers and the rest of the people, when I saw their fear, I immediately rose and said to the nobles and the deputy rulers and the rest of the people, who was afraid? Well, the people in general were afraid. Nehemiah said, do not be afraid on their account. Yahweh, the great and fear-inspiring one, keep in your mind and fight for your brothers, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Now it came about that as soon as our enemies heard that it had become known to us, so that the true God had frustrated their counsel, and we had all of us gone back to the wall, each one to his work. Yes, it came about that from that day forward, half of my young men were active in the work, and half of them were holding the lances, the shields, and the bows, and the coats of mail, and the princes were behind the whole house of Judah. So there were people protecting, standing as an armed force and as an overseeing body, you know, or a protective force behind, watching. As for the builders on the wall and those who were carrying the burden of load bearers, each one was active in the work with his one hand while the other hand was holding the missile. And the builders were girded, each one with his sword upon his hip while building, and the one to blow the horn was alongside me, was alongside Nehemiah. There was someone ready to blow the horn to warn everybody that there was an attack coming. But the builders were girded, verse 18, each one with his sword upon his hip while building. They had their sword on their hip while building, but also they had a missile in one hand while they were working with the other hand. They were ready to throw something at the enemies if they did attack, in verse 19. And I proceeded to say to the nobles and the deputy rulers and the rest of the people, Nehemiah says, the work is large and extensive, and we are spread about upon the wall, far apart from one another. Far apart from one another. In the place where you hear the sound of the horn, there is where you will collect yourselves together to us. Our God himself will fight for us. While we were active in the work, the other half of them also were holding the lances from the ascending of the dawn until the stars came out. They had a guard force until the stars came out. Besides, at that time I said to the people, let the men spend the night, each one with his attendant, in the midst of Jerusalem. And they must become for us a guard by night and workers by day. Nehemiah said to the people, Nehemiah said to the people, let the men spend the night, each one with his attendant, in the midst of Jerusalem. So they didn't go home to their homes. And they must become for us a guard by night and workers by day. So the men that were workers stayed and slept at night on the wall, in the wall, right close, very close to the wall where they'd been working. And they could guard against attackers coming and trying to destroy their work or whatever the attackers might try to do. Verse 23 now, as for me and my brothers and my attendants and the men of the guard who were behind me, we were not taking off our garments, each one having his missile in his right hand. They were seriously ready, Nehemiah and his brothers and all the workers with him, including the guard, which was a group of people ready to defend in battle. And each one, even the workers, everybody had a missile in their hand. We don't know exactly what the missile was, whether it was just a brick that they were going to throw at somebody, or if they were attacked, or what it was. But back in those days, of course, warfare was something that was still approved of by Jehovah. It wasn't disapproved like it is today. That's the end of Nehemiah chapter 4 for today. It's all that we've been intending to read today. Now Malachi chapter 4 is very short. If we finish early, then we'll have time to talk about some other things, maybe. Malachi chapter 4 is very short. It's the final chapter in the Bible itself. So after we read this today, we will have completed the Bible except for the remainder of the book of Nehemiah, and which is quite significant, wouldn't you say so? We've done a lot of Bible reading and talked about the Bible and studied it. Now, in reading it, in conjunction with some of the articles relating to the genealogy, such as the Wild Road article and the Crucible article that we've been working on. And this is Malachi chapter 4. For look, the day is coming that is burning like the furnace, and all the presumptuous ones and all those doing wickedness must become as stubble. And the day that is coming will certainly devour them, Yahweh of armies has said. Talking about the presumptuous ones and those doing wickedness, so that the day that is coming will not leave to them either root or bough. And to you who are in fear of my name, the Sun of Righteousness will certainly shine forth with healing in its wings, and you will actually go forth and paw the ground like fattened calves. And you people will certainly tread down the wicked ones, for they will become as powder under the soles of your feet in the day on which I am acting, Jehovah of armies has said. Remember, you people, the law of Moses, my servant, with which I commanded him in Horeb, concerning all Israel, even regulations and judicial decisions. Look, I am sending to you people Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and fear-inspiring day of Jehovah, or Yahweh. And he must turn the heart of fathers back toward sons, and the heart of sons back toward fathers, in order that I may not come and actually strike the earth with a devoting of it to destruction. And that concludes the Hebrew Aramaic scriptures, also translated into what is known as the Greek Septuagint. And we know that immediately following Malachi in the Protestant Bible, there's the book of Matthew, the beginning of the Christian Greek scriptures, as they're called, and also called the New Testament sometimes, or the Gospel accounts, of course, that's the beginning of the New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, then the book of Acts, then the book of Romans, then 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, First Thessalonians, Second Thessalonians. I'm trying to think what comes next. First and Second Timothy, and then Titus, and then Philemon, and then Hebrews, I believe. Let's check. And then that's followed by James, First and Second Peter, First, Second and Third John, Jude, and the book of Revelation. After First and Second Thessalonians, we have 1st and 2nd Timothy, then Titus, Philemon, Hebrews, James, 1st and 2nd Peter, 1st to 3rd John, and Jude and Revelation, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans, 1st Corinthians, 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, etc. 27 books in the New Testament, 39 books in the Old Testament of the Protestant Bible. It's remarkable. We could have done more reading in Nehemiah today because we had so much time, but we've got now 5 through 13, 9 books remaining in the book of Nehemiah to complete our reading of the entire Protestant Bible. Of course, we've got other books we could read. Also, little children, which are from the Eastern Bible, for example, which is also something we could find out about, or we could, when we're talking about reading the Old Testament in the Greek Septuagint, we get an idea what all these books are, what all the other books are that weren't included in the Protestant Bible, such as Tobit, Judas, the Greek Esther, and the Greek Daniel. Is that true? Wait a minute. Let's see if we can find Daniel in the other part. I guess those are the same books, Daniel and Esther. And then we have, it appears, let's just see. Yeah, looks like it. The second year of Artaxerxes. Let's take a look at the beginning of Esther and find out if it's the same. Chapter 1. Yeah. No, that's a banquet it's talking about. Okay. No, it's different. This book of Esther is different. In the Greek Septuagint. The book of Daniel, the Greek one. Well, that looks the same. Hang on. Yeah. It starts out the same as the book of Daniel. Okay, so interesting. It's a slightly different edition in the Septuagint of the book of Esther. But it's the same book, I believe, just like Daniel's the same book. But there's also, in the Septuagint version, we have the book of Wisdom. It's a different book that we don't have in the Protestant Old Testament. And the book of Sirach, the book of Baruch, the Epistle of Jeremy. I don't even know what many of these are. I haven't read them in their entirety in most cases. And Susanna, that's another book. Bell and the Dragon, First and Second Maccabees. I've read some of those books, parts of them, and First Esdras. Well, we should read these books. Prayer of Manasses, Third Maccabees and Fourth Maccabees, the books of the Apocrypha. That's remarkable, all the different books that we can read there, in addition to the books of the approved canon of the Protestant Old Testament, which we've just finished, except for the book of Nehemiah. Today, we just finished all of the Bible apart from those last 9 chapters of Nehemiah. Got about 8 more minutes now. It was so quick today, this study, partly because we had a short Crucible chapter today and we had a very short Malachi chapter. And I had 11 hours sleep last night, so it really was good to catch up on sleep. It's really I don't know if I've injured one of my hands or whether it's something else that's happening, you know, some age-related thing like arthritis or, you know, or health-related thing like arthritis. I have to figure out. But it just is a part of my hand that doesn't normally have any pain at all. And many things to do with arthritis, the cure is to take vitamin K2 and vitamin D and calcium, magnesium, and those things together are magnificent in reversing arthritis even. So I don't think this is arthritis, actually. I don't know what it is. I could have sprained my hand when I was lying in bed. I don't know yet. When an illness comes up, we don't immediately know the diagnosis. We don't understand what is wrong when something new happens. We have to take our time. We have to be patient and observe in what conditions the symptoms occur and, and research too. Research what causes, you know, pain. It's not joint pain. It's not joint pain that I'm experiencing. So it's something else. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's muscular. It's not really pain either. There's no pain right now. There's pain in certain positions of my hand. It's one of those things where, you know, it could be a sprain or something. It's minor too. It's not that I can't use my hand or that I don't have pain when I'm making a fist. At least not much. Yeah, it's more than normal though. More weakness in this hand or more pain than normal. So I have to figure out what am I eating that perhaps I'm deficient. Usually pain is a sign of deficiency of something. So it could be a deficiency. Now, those sorts of pains are not usually deficiency in vitamin C, but, you know, that's a good thing to take vitamin C, though. And I'm taking vitamin C. I take it every day. But recently, the slow release that I was taking, slow release vitamin C doesn't get dissolved before it gets to my intestines. And in my intestines, it causes gas, so I can't take the slow release anymore. I have to, I can't take as much either as I was taking because my tolerance has gone down, which is a good sign. It means I have no infection in my body if I can take less vitamin C before I get gas or diarrhea, or loose stool, loose bowel movement. If it's loose, it means I've got too much vitamin C, and it's got a specific way to it. You can know when it's vitamin C that's doing it. It's different from the way a loose stool normally feels, but yeah. So you can tell with vitamin C, you get to know how much vitamin C you can take, just like you get to know how much food you need to eat before you're not hungry anymore. It's the same thing, or similar. So I mean, you learn about it. But so now I'm grinding up my old Ester C chewable vitamin C made by, who's it made by? I guess the brand name doesn't matter, but it's a brand. It's a registered trademark, I think, Ester C. But it's chewables that I grind them up, and I use a coffee grinder to grind up my chewables so I don't have to chew them. Because they've been sitting around in my cupboard or somewhere on my counter for so long on my table that they're too hard to chew. So I just grind them up with the coffee grinder, mix them with a little water, and I've got my chewable. It's just a drink now. I just drink it, and then I clean the bowl. Wash it, rinse it out with water, and drink that, and then I'm done. My vitamin C that way, or I can use the slow-release vitamin C and grind them up in the coffee grinder. And then they don't taste at all good, not like the chewables, but neither are good for your teeth. When you're taking vitamin C, you should drink it through a straw, and you should just get the ascorbate powder and keep that in your fridge if you want to have vitamin C on hand to combat infection. You'd buy a pound or two of vitamin C, or maybe more, and keep it in your fridge in the ascorbate powder form, and then you can mix it with water and drink it. It tastes horrible. You can add sweetener to it if you want, but you can just drink it as it is. But drinking with a straw is better because it prevents contact of the ascorbic acid, which is what ascorbate is, with your teeth. Ascorbate is the same thing as vitamin C. You can get better forms of vitamin C also that contain, for example, quercetin complex has all those things in it, all the bioflavonoids and things like that. I take quercetin complex instead of having a more expensive vitamin C. I just take the ascorbate or the quick release, slow release, I should say. But I have the quick release ascorbate powder, and I have the slow release capsules, which are, they're actually caplets or whatever, because they don't have a shell around them. They can't be opened up. They're solid. So I've got to grind them with the coffee grinder. If you've got capsules, vitamin C that you can open up, just open them up and pour the powder out. You don't have to grind them in the coffee grinder because you don't want to eat the gelatin on the outside if you don't have to. That's my recommendation anyway. If you've got slow release, you need to make it faster release. If you need to make it faster release, just you can grind it with a coffee grinder. And mix it with a little water and drink it quickly. And if you want to keep it away from your teeth, if you need to keep it away from your teeth because you're drinking a lot of vitamin C, then use a straw. That's the other advice that I've been given, and I think it's good advice, especially when you're sick and you're drinking a lot of vitamin C. You know, I just realized too, I said 2 grams every 20 minutes, and then I found out recently I take 8 grams every 20 minutes. I just didn't check the numbers. But for a child, of course, it would be 2 grams every 20 minutes if the child was like about 4 years old or something. But for me, I'm taking 8 grams every 20 minutes when I take the vitamin C. So my numbers are far different from what I realized. So I took 26 grams the other day because of an infection. I was starting to get a sore throat. And it's now April 28th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:44 hours. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.